Without further ado, today's topic is something that we came across earlier this morning, actually, when we were trying to kind of go back and forth and maybe deviate a little from our typical, as some people have dubbed it, rants on dating and relationships, and want to be a little bit more introspective to kind of play off my background in human psychology and personal development, things of that nature, as well as, you know, being humanists, because myself and Coach Sarah like to pattern ourselves as humanists. So we came across something called the holistic psychologist. And I found this person months ago. I don't know who introduced me to her, but on Instagram, she's at the.holistic.psychologist. And it was something about a reparenting.
Yeah.
When adults need to reparent themselves for whatever reason, maybe they survived a traumatic youth, maybe their parents did not particularly parent them how a child deserved to be parented. And as always, we always say it's the person's level of consciousness at the time. We try not to cast blame as we get older. We kind of accept that these things did happen, even though they may or may not be right or correct. But the topic of reparenting yourself as an adult has come up because we use the term, you know, social intelligence and emotional intelligence a lot. And sometimes you didn't get those lessons as a kid. Sometimes you didn't get those lessons as a teenager. You had to learn on the fly because you're self-taught. And then as you got older, and I can say this as me getting older, realized, oh, that wasn't normal. Okay, cool. Got to do the whole parenting of oneself. And that's something that I have understood as I've gotten older, and especially over the last few months, that you're never done learning and you're never done parenting yourself, to be quite frank. So she has a list of eight rules here on how to know that you need reparenting. So I'm going to just rail them off. Sarah, you can jump in individually, or I can wait till the end. But issues with setting and holding boundaries. Ding, 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 ding.
We talked about last week. We
talked about that last week. And it was brought up yesterday when someone screamed out at me, Damien, boundaries, boundaries. Remember that conversation? So you have been listening. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm. Number two, self-betrayal. Does not keep one's word to self. And that's a hot button issue for a lot of people, especially in the dating realm. That's a very hot button issue.
Oh, we can come back to that one for sure.
We'll come back to that one.
Yep.
Number three, a low sense of self-worth, which I think is pretty self-explanatory. Dysfunctional relationship dynamics at number four. That's another one where we may deem it as normal when we're in the relationship, but as we've gotten out of it and we kind of look at it from a distant vantage point, whoops, wasn't what it should have been. Dysfunction, toxic, whatever word you want to use, that's the buzzword of today. Chronic fear of criticism. Oh my God. The amount of people I have worked with and been around that suffer from a chronic fear of criticism. Mm-hmm. We will delve into that a little bit more. Number six is something that's really important to me, which is emotional addiction. Addictions of all sort are very powerful, but an emotional addiction to other human beings, and we talk about self-acceptance and wanting that validation, that's a big deal. Sorry. Number seven. Number seven, childlike fantasies. Wanting to be fixed or saved. Wanting to fix or save someone else. Now, let's be real here. How many of us have actually done that or have had that done to us? I can say maybe 85 to 90% of us have fallen in one of those two camps.
Oh, Lord.
And number eight, which is very, very normal nowadays, especially with rental prices going up and people cohabitating because they can't afford to live alone. Codependency, chronic neglect of self to fulfill emotional needs through one another. Woo, that is a mouthful. Coach Girl Friday, that is a mouthful. So I want you just to kind of just pick which one stuck out to you more, or we can go into, you know, sequential order. Which one do you want?
Let's do sequential order because the first one is setting boundaries, which we already discussed last week. So if you haven't heard it, you just go back and listen to our You have two boundary episodes? There's two of them from last
week. I have multiple boundaries episodes, but I did not post the other one, the latest one, I don't think, on Anchor. But double check if I have or I haven't. But please feel free to check that out. If it's not on Anchor, look up any of the streaming services here or on YouTube or on Twitch at Damon G Show.
So boundaries is covered. Self-betrayal does not keep one's word to self. So this is actually a hot button for me, only because it is something, it's one of the first, when I'm working with clients, it is one of the first things I have to work on. because when it comes to fitness, because that's what I mainly coach in, when it comes to fitness and working out, it's a commitment. 100%, you have to commit to it if you want change. The biggest thing when it comes to that is not giving up on yourself, learning to be the one person that does not quit on you. We encounter people all the time that, you know, we set plans, even in the dating realm. I've done this, I'm not gonna lie, where you set plans and last minute you pull out for whatever reason. You need to be the one person you don't actually quit on. So it is very, very, very important. And it is a struggle with so many people. Not quitting on yourself, making yourself a priority. Do not betray you and your commitments. And even in dating, kind of goes back to boundaries. Do this. You do not want to hook up on the first date.
And you do it.
Don't betray yourself.
So I want to go to that, the self-betrayal, especially in the dating realm, because you hit the nail on the head. And I know we referenced this show, but it's the first thing I think of about that one episode of How I Met Your Mother, where Robin doesn't shave her legs and says she's not going to sleep with the hot doctor, but midway through dinner, she's trying to shave her legs in a bathroom so she could have sex with the hot doctor, even though she promised Lily that she wasn't going to do that. And thusly, she did. I can talk about my own histories with people. Full disclosure, folks, I have made promises on dates that I said I wasn't going to do something and your boy done did it. Or even in relationships where I said, no, I'm not going to, the soapbox almost, to say, no, I'm not going to sacrifice my own personal self-worth for the betterment of this relationship. And let's be honest, kids, how many of us have done that?
Yep.
More often than we want to admit.
It is very common. I mean, it's hard. I think everyone probably struggles with that one a little bit. If you don't, like, kudos. I want to get better. I want to get better at that. Sometimes, yeah, just I want to get better at it. Hands down.
That ties into number three. Mm-hmm. Low self-worth. I think number two and number three can kind of be intertwined in the fact that if you are sabotaging your own self, and we've talked about self-sabotage and things like that, if you're betraying yourself, that is a modicum of low self-worth.
Yep.
Because you're going against your core values.
Yep. Self-worth is very, very, very important, and it has to continue to grow and build over time. I'm still struggling with self-worth. I am the coach that talks about self-worth all the time. And yet I still struggle with it. And it's very hard to develop, but it just takes one day at a time. Self-worth, not quitting on yourself, setting boundaries. They kind of all tie together. All of them.
I've told you this in the past that when I was in my early 20s, I'd say that I put my self-worth in being able to attract a partner. That was it. That was the number one thing. That was all. No, once I attracted a partner in my early to mid 20s, check, check, and check, I have accomplished everything I set out to do. Hooray.
AKA, well, also the reason Sarah got married at the age of 20 before she could drink. Checklist. That was my worth. It's not good. It's not healthy. It's why we
talk wait. Hold on. We're about to get a little juvenile for 2 seconds here, y'all. Because y'all know we tend to get juvenile every once in a while.
We fine.
Are you meaning to tell me that a person shouldn't get married until they're drunk?
No. 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 You just need to be a lot older. You are at the age of 20 and 21 and 22. In your early 20s, you are not fully mentally developed. Now, women will mentally develop quicker than men. It's true. It's true. Don't start. Look up these studies, sir. Their brains mature quicker than men. You're even as women, you are not ready. You don't know yourself yet. You barely, I can almost guarantee you're just getting out of your teenage years where you do not know your self-worth, where all your self-worth is questioned throughout high school and college and figuring out who you are. You're not there yet. You're not there yet at 20. You're not there yet at 21, 22, 23. Am I saying if you got married that young, your marriage isn't going to work out? No. There are people that it works out for.
Okay, prime example. I'm in the chat right now, and Topher, as always, likes to chime in with his own little devil's advocate bull crap. He's like, I got married at 23 and I'm still married. Listen, dude, just because you married a vampire who doesn't age at a very young age does not mean that everyone's going to do what you do. Okay, brother? Everyone's going to get married at 23 and be married until the end of time. That's a rarity, not the rule.
It is not the rule. It is a rarity. There's not really... It's hard because we want to make like all these lines in dating and make it all black and white. There's so much gray in this. Getting married that young is just difficult. It's just going to be a little bit harder. So you make that choice for yourself.
Oh, and I want to ask him a question, actually, because I know he's listening. So I'm going to ask you, and I don't think I know this question, Chris. Were you drunk on the day of your wedding? How drunk were you off tequila when you got married to your lovely wife?
Listen, we need to have a tequila night. I really want some tequila.
He said no, but Teresa was drunk. So his wife was drunk when they got married.
I was sober. I was completely sober because I couldn't legally drink.
You didn't sneak one in?
I did not. I told you the first time I got drunk was on my honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, and you got sick.
I got very sick. It was because it was a storm and the boat.
Way to get out of consummating the marriage there, Sarah. I got sick, honey.
My goodness, you're sassy today. No, there was a storm. My honeymoon was, it just rained the entire time. I didn't get to do anything fun.
Was it number four? Were we on number four? Yes. Dysfunctional relationship dynamics. Now that takes many, many shades.
You don't have the first three, you're just opening the door for dysfunction. Boundaries, not being able to set boundaries, not being able to enforce them. It opens a door for dysfunction. Not having a self-worth opens the door for someone taking advantage of you and making you feel even worse. Some people do feed off of that. Self-betrayal. But self-betrayal. That you can being a self-betrayer, you can also self-betray your relationship. Mm-hmm. It's very common to where if you have low self-worth, you will betray yourself. You can betray your relationship because you don't feel like you're worth it. You don't feel that you're good enough for this relationship and you don't deserve it. And so you self-sabotage.
Which in theory is dysfunctional. But I honestly, in my estimation, think she's talking about when people are toxic in a relationship and they're either overly controlling or they're just not a good person to be in a relationship with. They're easily detestable, or they're, like you said, to borrow a term from you, say they're overly spicy for no good reason. Or, you know, they gaslight, or they manipulate, or pick and choose from any Lifetime movie that the male antagonist perpetrates, and then there you go.
Oh, which is wrong with them? Because
with Meredith Baxter Burney has every single host and star of that show. Do you know who that is, by the way?
Who did you say?
Meredith Baxter Burney.
No.
She was the mom on Family Ties, but for maybe about a 3-year run, she was the go-to woman for all of those Lifetime made-for-TV movies.
They use the same people over and over and over again.
And it's the same dudes, too. They all look just douchey.
Perfect. They all just look too perfect. When, you know how we talked about pretty guys? They're pretty. Mm-hmm.
It's just pretty. That goes to dysfunction. If you're too pretty, you're dysfunctional. Sorry.
Yeah, so I'm going to own up to this. I don't like to own up to this, but it's true. I have had to reparent, and my ex has to reparent himself as well. And there was a lot of gaslighting, especially from me. And it's something I intentionally did have to work on. And it was part of my dysfunction. I grew up with gaslighting. So he grew up with gaslighting. It made for very toxic marriage. So gaslighting is reparenting, because it's learned behavior. It's learned behavior. You know, I grew up in a divorced home. Every single person in my family has been divorced. We talk about generational curses is what my family calls them, is because we learn these behaviors, and if we don't break them and learn to reparent ourselves, our children are destined to go down the exact same path.
Absolutely right.
So reparenting, working on it. Don't just work on it for yourself, work on it for the next generation. There we go.
But doesn't that go against everything we talk about doing something for yourself and no one else?
Well, not just for yourself. Do it for yourself. 100% do it for yourself. But know that doing it for yourself has a bigger effect than just you. It goes beyond you. It's like dropping a pebble in the water. You're doing it. There's a big initial splash within you, but it ripples out.
Thank you, Coach Sarah, for that.
Let me be a coach. I'm a cheesy coach. That's okay.
That's okay. So number 5 is a chronic fear of criticism.
Ooh. So this one, I'm not scared of criticism. Is that weird? I actually ask for it. Hang on. I'm trying to think if that's okay or not.
Well, while you're pondering that, I can speak to me how I relate to number 5 is the fear of criticism, because in the household we grew up in, my brothers and I, it was physically abusive. And if you made one mistake, you might have caught the backhand depending on the severity of the mistake you made, and was normalized. You know, we always talk about, oh, you coming out of pocket. We're not back in my day. You know, you would have caught the backhand. Does that make it okay because you're critiquing your parents for not being decent humans? And then it's like, no, I'm the adult, you know, my way or the highway. And then you catch the backhand, as I've seen plenty of parents of my former clients have done. And I've had to report them to ACS. So if you want to call me a snitch, go ahead, be my guest. But how to do a job. But at the same token, it doesn't make it right for a kid to become an adult. And thusly, and I can tell you this, my first job, I was behind the cash register. My God, I was so worried about making a mistake. I was stone frozen to make a mistake behind that register, because in my mind, I thought if I messed up, I was either going to get cussed out, made fun of, or fired on the spot because of previous conditioning.
And I've had to work with people about stuff like that. Yeah, I have clients I have to work with on that all the time. Part of what I have to do is criticize what you're doing, not in the most loving way possible, but it's hard to, when you're in that mindset, it's hard to accept when someone's like, hey, I notice you're doing this, you know, we can't do that. That's not okay. It just destroys something inside them. And it's hard to see because I'm coming from a place of caring typically. I'm going to be honest with you. Typically, I'm coming from a place of caring and wanting better for you. And when you're automatically on the defense, it's hard it's hard to just be like, I'm not trying to hurt you. And mm-hmm. it's because it's usually from a toxic household, very toxic household. And all this we're going through this because this will 100% play into your relationships. All of this will play into relationships. This is one of the biggest issues within relationships is communication. And if you're constantly scared of any sort of criticism, you're going to bump heads your partner comes up to you and is like, hey, it's really kind of bothering me how you hang the towels on the door. Can we like not hang them on the door and actually hang them on a hook? And lose it over something simple. So it's important. This is very specific for a reason.
This is oddly specific because I know it has nothing to do with me, but see, no. I felt some type of way you saying that right now. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, why the hell is that important? Like, let someone tell me that. And I'm going to look at them with the face of, really? That's what you want to, the hill you want to die on? The towels? That's a critique?
Yeah. So this is a very specific issue in my marriage because it used to just drive me nuts when my he can attest to this. We have hooks to hang the towels on, but he'd hang them on the door to where I couldn't shut the door because they were hanging on there. And I got weird about the moisture on the wooden door and it just bothered me. And I was like, and I had to leave me alone. I approached it nice. I'm like, hey, can we please use these hooks that exist for a reason?
Did you say why you wanted to use the hooks? Did you explain all this moisture babble and all that stuff?
I did explain that. But when you're coming at someone critiquing who doesn't know how to handle any sort of criticism, they shut off. Just shut off. I'm like, I'm not trying to attack you. I have a reason for my thinking. Please hear me out. I'm not just trying to be a bitch. There's a reason for my thinking. It's a pet peeve of mine. I don't like it. So yeah, no, I was trying to communicate and it was not received well.
Gee, you think?
Let's flip it. Okay.
When have you yourself been afraid of other people's criticisms?
When have I been afraid?
I know you said you're not afraid, but I'm going to kind of blow your spot up really quick and say, I know you've been afraid of other people's criticisms.
I'm sure there is a time. I'm typically not, but when it comes to, especially something new I'm learning, when I'm super insecure in something new and I'm trying to learn it and I'm trying to get it down, coming at me on the offense sometimes can terrify me. I want to learn and I want to know what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. It's how it's approached, I guess, for me. Like, I'd much rather someone come tell me, hey, listen, you're doing this wrong. I'm like, oh, shoot, I had no clue. Thank you for pointing it out. That's me personally. I actually look and seek out the knowledge, and because I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. I want to do it right every single time, the best of my abilities. So criticism I welcome for the most part. I'm trying to think if there is a time I'm just like, maybe if I'm just not in the mood to hear it.
I think that's it. I also think a lot of the time we're not in the mood to hear criticism because nobody wants to be critiqued, but at the same token, we have to have, and here's that phrase again, the emotional intelligence to know that being critiqued is a normal part of existing in this world. Yeah. It's going to happen. There is no amount of bubble wrap layers you can put yourself under that's going to protect you from any person's criticism.
No walls. No walls.
Well, we talked about walls last week and
yep.
No walls. The dam will be broken eventually.
It will penetrate the wall.
Number six is the emotional addiction to safety. Because if you grew up in a traumatic household and someone even throw him, and Dio and I have talked about this, where someone throws you a morsel of positive reinforcement, you automatically attach yourself to that. instantaneously and you crave more of it. It's sort of a dopamine addiction of sports, but in a safety valve sort of way. And I have worked with at least one out of three clients I have right now currently have that kind of addiction to either a feeling a person gives them, i.e. butterfly chasers, or B, the fact that they themselves are still trying to get that kind of affirmation addiction from their parents at 30 to 40 years of age. That's the ones that kind of I feel the most empathy for, to be quite honest.
The parent one's a big one. I don't think we honestly realize how much some of us still chase that wanting validation and approval for their parents. And it's a high, listen, I know, and I didn't realize it, something I've been facing this week. I didn't realize how much I still sought after this approval that you're doing a good job, you're doing okay, this cheer, rah, rah kind of thing. It happens. Because you brought this up, this dopamine addiction. We do this in dating too. Sometimes we will get too attached really quickly. And we talked about this about gambling. There's like, when you send a text message, they don't respond all the time. And all of a sudden they will one time. And it's like this dopamine addiction. Like, oh, they are still interested. And then they, you know, not catching the clues kind of thing. Like, all right, they're not as interested. I'm putting way more into this than they are actually putting into this. But that one in 10 out of the times we reach out to them, they respond and we're just overwhelmed by this attention. It's like gambling. It's like gambling. You know, you go to the slot machines and you lose and you lose and you lose. But that one time you win an extra $2. Oh, we got to keep going. And it's that little addiction. And it can put you into some, it's just opening yourself up to be hurt, really.
Well, think of it this way. Think of it also in the realm of relationships where you have that one partner who's always constantly just berating you, but they'll throw you a morsel of, I'll change, I'll get better, I'll do this. See how you just rolled your eyes? Exactly. We've all had that and seen that. And then it's the emotional addiction of, I can change them. They're going to change for me. And then you realize they're not going to do it and you're stuck. Hey, I can go back again. All these things I've said so far, we're up to number 6. I grew up with all this stuff. All of it. I grew up with self-betrayal. I grew up with low self-worth. I grew up with dysfunctional family dynamics, the fear of the criticism, the emotional addiction of my mom finally being okay with anything we ever did, you know, right down to our dating lives. Like, oh, you're not dating Latina? Great, big surprise. Like, all of us went through that. Oh, you got a B+? Where's the A? And we all know parents like that.
Yeah.
We all know parents like that. Yeah. And we know partners like that.
Yeah.
Supervisors, co-workers.
Yep.
But it all starts, and it sounds basic as hell to say, it really does go back to childhood. It almost always goes back to when we are kids and we are vulnerable in this world and we are hoping at the time that our parents and our loved ones and our family members are going to guide us in the safest way possible. And then the reality does not meet our childlike expectations. And thusly, we are left watching Sesame Street, wishing Big Bird was real. And that everybody, that's not a me thing, guys. So don't go chiming in thinking, you know, Big Bird was my imaginary friend or whatever. I had a different coping mechanism. It wasn't that. But that's what we're left doing as kids. And then when we get older and we don't come to grips with these sorts of things, we got to kind of work from scratch. Like I said before, it's not easy, you know, and we're just on number 6. Number 7 for me is the biggest one. It's the childlike fantasies of wanting to be fixed or saved or wanting to be Captain Save-a those and do it yourself.
Save a thought.
Well, those, hose and thought. So we'll just say those. Yeah. But it goes back again. Childlike fantasy. The knight in shining armor is going to come and save you. The Prince Charming is going to come and save you. I'm going to slay the dragon and rescue the princess, except, unless my name's Mario. And then
Mario.
Oh, so I'm going to deviate for 2 seconds, y'all. I have been running this Mario Brothers impersonation into the ground because I've made it really R-rated. Because when you really think about Mario Brothers, right, all he's ever done is gotten a kiss on the forehead from the princess. But she's always getting kidnapped by Bowser. Even in Smash Brothers, she shows she can fight, right? So the mythos of Mario is he saves the princess, and then every time he goes to the castle, Toad is saying, nah, bro, she ain't here, which is code for she's in Bowser's house. So I always make the joke of Mario is like, oh, where's the princess? She's with the Bowser. I've been saying it all weekend. And when Mario goes like, Toad, where's the princess? Oh, she's boning a Bowser. And then that's what you left with. The princess is really getting on with Bowser. And Mario's like, oh, no.
If you guys want to be traumatized by Mario, just hit Damien up.
There's a reason why we call Mario Bros. Mario Cucks. That's the reason why we call it that.
Every time we go to free play, you want to play Mario Cucks? All right.
And that's why I'm always Luigi, because Luigi was smart. He let Mario do all the dirty work.
I always get stuck with Mario, man. This one hurts. This one makes me sad. Mm-hmm. Because it's, again, like Mario, the woman is really, half the time, and I can say this from experience, wanting someone to come rescue them, wanting someone to save them. And men typically are like, yes, let me be your rescuer. When neither one of them, one, the male may not be fit to rescue in that moment. Two, the woman has her own arms and legs. She can get herself out of there. She just needs the emotional and mental capacity to do it. She doesn't need someone to do it. Male, you don't need to rescue someone to feel worthy. That doesn't make you better or stronger. And for whatever reason, because of Hollywood, because of music, because of these chick flicks, I don't even know. We expect these men to come in and rescue us, and men think that's their job, is to come and save us and rescue us. And women are looking and seeking for someone to come take us out of our misery and just fulfill that hole in our heart. No, just the heart. No, no.
Just no.
No. You can save yourself. You can feel whole yourself. And then you can find a partner to team up with. And you guys grow and thrive on that. It's not this, oh, I'm broken. You're broken. Let's see if our pieces fit together and become whole. You're both broken, okay? You're both broken. Why do you want something? Just more broken pieces. You're combining two broken pieces together, and it's a mess. So fix yourself. Fix yourself first, both of you. And then look, two things together that are whole and are fixed and beautiful can make something even more beautiful. And yeah, I sounded really cheesy there.
Yeah, you did. You sounded real Hallmark just now.
I don't know where that rant came from, but it did. Came out there like that. It just went.
Look, full disclosure, y'all. I used to be Captain Save-A-Ho. I used to do that because I thought that was the only way I brought value to the table. And Sarah and I talked about this weekend, how I recounted growing up when I had low self-esteem about, oh, if I save the girl from herself, then I will be handsomely rewarded by being the good dude that helped her through the drama and the trauma.
No, Mario.
No, but at least I got laid. I was like Mario, who didn't get laid. But that was the role I fit. You know, if you play video games, Ghosts and Goblins, where King Arthur or Arthur the Knight, he goes to rescue the princess and fights all these demons and ghosts, and he's just thinking, yeah, it's my duty to rescue the princess. Dude, I was trained as a kid to rescue, quote unquote, the princess. And it's ridiculous. Ridiculous that I had to be Captain Save-A-Ho. But secretly, I remember this. I'll never forget this. When I was growing up in my household, and I love my parents. They are flawed. They are human.
They're human.
But I kept wanting to be saved from that environment, to the point where I ran away multiple times when I realized nobody was going to save me. I had to run away to do it. I ran away to college to escape it. So how many of us out there are actually running away from these kinds of things because we have to save ourselves, to quote what Sarah said? We got no other way to do it. We run away. Some of us run away to other relationships, or we run away to college, or we just run away, period, and are never heard from again.
I'm trying to think if running away is good or bad. It's probably not the healthiest. Escaping, like leaving the environment, may be needed.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving an unhealthy, toxic environment is probably one of the first steps. It's stepping out and saying, I can't. No one's going to save me, which they shouldn't. I can't take this anymore. I need to step away. I don't know that running is completely unhealthy. I got to figure that one out. Because there are times you have to step away. You have to. You have to completely cut off. It's like those boundaries. Boundaries have been crossed over and over and over again. And you have to separate yourself from it. So running away, but running away to something else, like running away to another relationship, that's definitely not the healthiest.
And just an FYI, Chris, because in the chat he's saying that I'm blaming video games for my Captain Save-A-Ho tendencies. I'm not blaming video games, but what are we trained to, Chris? You and I are in a similar age bracket. What were we trained to do? Rescue the Princess by Mario. We have to save the damsel in distress. Superman saving Lois Lane back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Disney with the prince saving the princess.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Snow White.
Dude, let's not get me started on Snow White. You know how I feel about that one.
I know. I brought it up. It's more fun that way.
Okay, yeah. So for those who don't know my stance on Snow White, okay, she had seven dudes in the friend zone, okay, and them dwarves. They were in the friend zone, and don't get me started. There's no such thing as a friend zone. Look, man, if you were seven midgets or dwarfing people back in 1925, whenever the hell that movie came out, and you had some fair-skinned, princessy-sounding woman come to your village because you've never seen a girl before, how the hell do you think they're going to act? They're going to acquiesce to everything that she wants because she's pretty, and they're going to kind of just go by what she wanted for the time. Remember, Disney was all about cashing them checks on simping back in the day. Okay. So the fact that, look, I'll give the dwarves credit. They wound up killing, what is it? What's her name? The Evil Queen. The Evil Queen's her name, right? In the story.
Yeah, I think they were.
Maleficent is from Sleeping Beauty.
Yes. You're correct.
Okay. So the dwarves did kill her. And then what winds up happening? And I know everyone out there who's listening will be like, well, back in the 30s, nobody thought like that, Damien. Well, you know what? We think like that now. And no, the dwarves didn't deserve special treatment because they helped Snow White. I'm not saying they deserve to get some Snow White booty or anything like that. All I'm saying is they were the first iteration of Disney friend zoning.
That's your issue with Snow White. I have other issues with Snow White.
And Chris just realized, he goes, I never thought about that. Damn. See?
Yeah, there's other issues with Snow White I have. It's this damsel in distress, this, oh, someone come rescue me. I have an evil stepmother, and I need a man to come take me out of it.
Well, that's Cinderella.
That is also Snow White.
Snow White had an evil stepmother?
Yeah, her dad died, and she was left with just stepmother. She didn't have stepsisters. It was just an evil queen.
Okay, so aside from friend zone dwarves and childlike fantasies of Snow White and Cinderella being rescued and Ariel being rescued, damn, all these princesses being rescued except for Jasmine, who started to mouth off to Prince Ali, which was cool, but that's beside the point. Number eight, codependency, chronic neglect of the self to fulfill emotional needs through another.
Codependency. Listen. Codependency is real, and it's hard to notice you are in a codependent relationship until it's too late. I was in a codependent relationship, 100%. He will not deny this. He will say this too. We were codependent upon each other. We isolated ourselves to where it was just him and I, and we did not know how to function without each other, and it was not good, and it was scary. And then when one of us decided we were going to better ourselves and become more, it, because of the codependent relationship, it caused major, major, major scary issues. So codependency is real, and can, it's not just this, oh, I can't live without you, you can't live without me. No, there's more to it than that. And it gets really, it can get really scary really quickly if you are not careful. Codependency, I did not realize how hard and how scary codependency can be and how many issues it can cause. I won't go into my story for the sake of my children. Just know codependency is it's scary.
It's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, and if you've got to break it early. Break it early. Don't get into one in general. It's hard. It's hard when you come from that emotional, you're looking for this. This is how the emotional addiction comes into play and how codependency forms. Someone there is giving you attention, and if they have an unhealthy and are addicted to emotion the same way, you need each other, and you can't function healthy. You can't function without each other. It gets very, 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 very unhealthy and sad. It's sad. Like, I look back and I'm just sad. Like, man, it's not okay to not be your own person, to not be able to do things on your own. You're still a human. You're still a human that has individual needs and wants. And when you set those aside, it depression starts to set in. It can very much set in. Anxiety starts to set in. It's just all kinds of crazy, crazy effects with codependency and codependent relationships.
Right. And to be honest, for those who are just joining in, again, I just want to clarify here on Damon's Advocate, we were going over the holistic psychologist's eight reasons why you may need reparenting as an adult in the dating realm. So as she continues, we've covered all eight. She continues and talks about, it is through our parents or caregivers that ideally, it's in parentheses, we learn how to get our core physical and emotional needs met, which goes back to what we were saying. If you're trying to get all these things done in your current relationships, that means when you were younger that you didn't get those core needs met as a child. Because mm-hmm. the three, and I agree with this next statement she makes, is the three core human needs
yep.
are to be seen, are to be heard, and to be authentically expressed for who we are. Mm-hmm. When you really boil it down to those three simple things, that makes all the sense in the world. Because in reality, think about how as adults, when we have person-to-person relationships, we want to be seen, we want to be heard without judgment, and we want to be able to express ourselves authentically in a world where it seems as if everyone is judging us for our authenticity or even lack thereof.
Yeah. This is, I'm actually really appreciative of this post, because as a parent, terrifies me. It terrifies me to raise my children. Like, I do not want them to go through, and no parent does want their children to go through what they went through. They want them to have a wonderful, successful, healthy life and healthy relationships. And I know as a parent, my the weight of my responsibility. I am well aware of it, and it terrifies me. I had a breakdown this morning because I took my daughter to school she didn't go to school, but we had to go pick up her ID and the tags to drop her off at school. And I felt so out of place in that line as a mom. And it just was, I had this weight of, am I a good parent? Am I doing the right thing? Am I not doing enough for my daughter? I can't believe she's starting school. She's five. These are the most vulnerable times in her life. And just my brain exploded. Okay. I'm aware of the weight of being a parent, and it's hard and it's scary. And I was really appreciative of this post because as long as I can make sure she's seen, and I'm, this is a matter of being present around your children. Long as, and I think at any point as a parent, no matter if you've screwed up, you can come back and do this. As long as you make sure they're seen, I see you, and validate it. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. And then let them express who they are and their feelings. And it's hard, that part's hard for me sometimes, because like a three-year-old has all kinds of feelings whenever they want about not, oh, I want, this was specific today, I want cereal. Okay, pour a bowl of cereal, and then a meltdown because they didn't get to pour their bowl of cereal. And it's hard to let them express it, but then it's a matter of being present. Let them express it, come back and be like, all right, I understand you're frustrated. I'm not going to let you pour your bowl of cereal right now. I understand you're frustrated with that, but it's not going to happen because messes happen and I've already poured you cereal. So enjoy it. It's hard. It's hard. Parenting's hard. 1 star out of 5, don't recommend. So
is that your Yelp review of parents, of being a parent? 1 out of 5?
Yeah. Yep.
So for all those people out there who are parents of younger children, because younger children. All of Sarah's kids are under the age of 6.
Under the age of 5.
Oh, I was trying to give you an out, but okay. Under the age of 5, she gave it 1 out of 5 stars on parenting Yelp. So just throwing it out there for all of you all. So I know a lot of, you know, a lot of the people that tune in, they do have kids, younger kids. And
I love my kids. Mind you, I love them.
I don't want kids. So yay.
Wholeheartedly. I will mama bear. I love my children, but
but sometimes
it's hard.
Won't be kids.
Parenting is hard.
But remember, you were a kid yourself at one point, Sarah.
I was a kid having kids. So
got married at 20. Give me 5 minutes of your time of the, in this realm of you were married at 20. You have 3 kids by the age of 28. They are all under the age of 5. You are a coach and an empowering source to other young men and women who are either going through something similar or be thinking about getting married at a young age or having kids at a young age. How do you balance the lessons you've learned with the emotional feelings and attachments you have to those feelings while staying impartial to someone who may want that for themselves?
Oh, yeah. How do I do it? That's a great question. I don't know that I do it well, so I don't know if you would ask my advice. It's hard to, you have to separate yourself from the situation. You have to separate your emotions from the situation. I tend to be a very logical person. It's actually one of my hang up sometimes because I'm too logical that I can't get past certain things, like, and emotions I can't get out sometimes because it's all just in here. So I have the ability to separate myself from the emotion of it, hearing them out, understanding why they want this, and then giving them my Yelp review or like, okay, I understand why you want this. Yes, children are fun. When they are the sweetest, they are the sweetest and they melt your heart and they're fantastic and you love them. And in that moment, you will give them a 10 out of 5 because it's just overwhelming. Also,
in relation to your clients.
Yeah, I this is what I would tell my clients. Also, no. Also, no, that it comes at a cost. It comes at a great cost that you may not be prepared for. When you're doing it young, you develop these goals and these dreams that you don't realize you have until later. And when you throw kids in the mix, it is much harder to chase those dreams and do all the things you always wanted to do. And so the younger you do it, the harder it is. I mean, I know my kids will be, I'll be like 43 when my kids are 18 and out of the house, something like that. So I'll be done. They'll be done early. So I can go, I will be able to chase those dreams and go travel the world and do all the things I want to do, live in a bus and go wherever I want to go when I'm 43. But it's putting you, it comes at a cost of putting them on hold. So you got to make what's more important to you. What's more important to you? Something you know you want for sure, or something you don't have any experience in and you will never understand until you're in it. You will never understand what it's like to be a parent until you're in it. And you will never understand the cost until you're in it. Are you prepared for that? Are you prepared for that? So that's how I have to be like, I understand. Yes, they're great. Also know this. So that's how I have to approach it.
I can be honest and say that when I hear all these stories and I see all my wonderful friends and family who have kids, and I talk about this on the show all the time, I am completely fine being Cool Uncle Damien. That is my role. I will gladly be Cool Uncle Damien. And that's it. We'll just leave
you're
it
great
at that.
You're great, Cool Uncle Damien.
Well, your kids are biased already. Yeah, they're biased, though. Because I give them things like cool uncles do.
Yeah.
By the way, I did figure out what it was I wanted to give them. It dawned on me this afternoon. I'll tell you off air, but I figured it out. So, I just want to take a couple minutes transitioning really quick, y'all. So again, go back and check out The Holistic Psychologist on Instagram. And she says one last thing here that really kind of just caught my attention, and it made me actually call my father and apologize for some of the things I have said to him over the last couple of years. For those who don't know, my father was my best friend for a lot of years, and we had a falling out. You know this, Sarah, what the reasons are, and anyone who's dated me in the last 10 years knows what the falling outs are. I called him just to literally say, you did the best you could. I understand. Because what she says, which makes me really question a lot of my own feelings growing up as a kid and now as an adult, leaving it behind and being comfortable leaving it behind, it's having to reparent yourself does not mean that you had bad parents. It means that your parents didn't learn certain skills that allowed them to parent you in the way you wish you were parented. I can't put that any simpler.
Yeah.
Level of consciousness, like we talk about.
It's true. One of my biggest battles is accepting the fact that I'm probably not going to be a perfect parent. It's hard for me to accept. It really is. It's my biggest fear in life is screwing over those kids. 100% my biggest fear, biggest of all times. And one of the things, like when I'm going through my own counseling with my own therapist, I have to face all the time is, Sarah, you're gonna mess up and it's okay. And it's, you're human. And know this in relationships too. You're gonna mess up. You're human. And your significant other is gonna mess up.
It's human.
They're human. This is what we talked about with grace last time. It's a matter of having grace for that situation and being able to discern when to have grace and when to back off.
Right.
And you're human and it's okay. And all you can do is those three things and then be present and own up, own your shit.
I think that's the number one thing. We say it every week. Own your stuff. Just own it. Just be open to it and own it. I want to switch gears, like I was saying before, and end on the show on a high note, or as I like to say, a ridiculous note. So we brought up Mario Cux earlier, Sarah. We talk about all these random walls and penetration jokes that we said this past weekend, you know, with everybody else. You have a very interesting cake. Cake, WAP, whatever you want to call it. Waffles and pizza, as far as I'm concerned. That's what WAP means to me. Things I can't eat at the moment. But you are trying to work on something interesting with women of your Facebook circle. And that is horror stories on online dating or just stories of online dating. So have you come across anything humorous to the point where you'd be willing to share it with the audience?
Uh-huh. My experience with online dating or some of my, I can both. Share one of mine. Whew, this is my favorite story. You've heard the story. Mm-hmm. This is my, it's a terrible situation, but it's hilarious to me. So I went on, I did on Bumble. Bumble is what I was on. And I went on this date. And we connected because we were both musicians, songwriters, singers. Okay. And you know this story. I love it so much. It's so bad. And so I have not written and played music in a long time. So we connected on that. He's like, hey, why don't you come over to my studio? Let's go to my studio and we can write music and record again. And then it'll be fun just to kind of, you know, create something together. All right, no problem. So go to the studio, which I'm pretty sure is, no, I know is where he's living and living there illegally.
He's a squatter.
Uh-huh. And there's, it's a community there of squatters living in recording studios. So this is over in Plano, by the way.
Oh, it's in Plano. I thought this was like in Austin.
No. So I go and I'm like, I'm here. I'm like, all right, this is already sketch. I'm already at a distance. And we go up to his recording studio. And he says, he preferences, like, all right, before we start, like, writing, like, this is kind of how I get into the mood of, like, letting my creative energies just flow. And you can do this. I want you to do this. So just take off all your clothes and just stare at yourself in the mirror. Just stare at yourself. I don't want you to look at what you hate. I don't want you to look at what you like. I just want you to look at yourself naked and just, what do you see? And then we'll start writing. And I was like, that's not going to happen, sir. That is not going to happen. I am not going to just take off my clothes in front of you and stare at myself in the mirror before we write music. No. And that is my all-time favorite. The first and last time I saw him. And I said, goodbye.
So, Chris, I know you're watching, so I want to know where in Dallas is this place so I can blow this spot up real quick. Just shout them out.
It's, you know,
it's there's a Deep Ellum, isn't it?
There's some pretty good Asian restaurants over by this spot if you wanted to go check
it out. Is Harry Hines Boulevard? Because no. The play people talk about this?
No. Not Harry Hines.
Chris is saying run away, aboard, run away.
Yep. Yes, that's exactly. I was like, it's not
that. So time out. My man literally took you on a date back to the place he was squatting in to help you work with you on your guitar because you play bass, right? Mm-hmm. So it was very artistic. That's why I thought initially it was Austin. And then he tells you, and this is the worst pickup line, I swear. He tells you, girl, mm-hmm. I need you to be comfortable. I need you to take your clothes off. I need you to look in the mirror and love everything about you and feel comfortable with you before we start. Because y'all gonna start playing naked. Ding. He was gonna be strumming, trying to strum something else that wasn't a guitar.
If he talked in that accent, I may have been a little bit more, have more respect for him. But he talked more like a Californian, so. So we
is that why you don't like Californians?
There's lots of reasons. Oh man, what does he say?
Right before you get to downtown Dallas, it's where we did our wrestling radio show. Okay.
That may be Harry Hines, right before you get to downtown Dallas. Yep.
Jigna's like, Harry Hines, free play people are freaky. Hey man, I can't speak for everyone in the free play family. We love them, but they have some interesting occupations. Let's just say that. Got to make the bill somehow.
Oh, yeah. This was Plano. This was over in Plano. So I'm shocked that there's more than one place like this. That makes me laugh.
That's typical in New York City, though. We have plenty of squatters who will literally take out a whole abandoned building, pretty much like a crack house, and you just get a lot of yamming. You get a lot of shenanigans. And yes, Topher, I know you're from California, but you're not a typical Californian.
Okay, I'm gonna say
shout out to Ian, who says we're okay. Yeah, the people at Free Play are more than okay.
Yes, they are. So Chris, I will own up to this. I'm an eighth generation Texan. Okay, this is how I identify.
Like that means something.
I knew this was coming. My family has been here for eight generations. My kids are ninth. So cool. I am also half Californian. I don't like to own up to that.
Time out. Back up. You can't call yourself half of a state. I'm half Californian.
I can. I just did.
That's not a racial component or a cultural background.
Listen, it is majorly a cultural background. I don't think you understand this. Texas is not the rest of the United States. I love saying this to him. He's a
I'm gonna need this. Keep going.
We were our own country at one point. We have our own culture. We don't like to be considered part of the South because we're not part of the South. We're our own thing. I love saying all this because I know how bad Feisting gets. And we have Chris. How long have you been in Texas, though? This will make a difference.
Yeah, but Chris is half Canadian, so that counts for something, right? If you're using that logic, he's half Wolverine.
Wait. When did you move to California, though? That makes it because my family moved. Texas is a country, Damien. Texas is a country.
I have not learned this, Chris. I'm sorry. Okay, Jigna, Ian, anyone else? Is Texas like their own? Do they think they're their own country? Honestly, yes,
100%.
The South shall rise again, according to Jigna. Much like the temperatures, the South shall rise again, apparently.
What tangent have we gone off on? Second grade. Okay, so when I talk about California, I'm talking about the past 5 years. So we were part of Mexico at one point.
Is this the one about the homegirl who seduced the general and she was a lady of the night?
Thanks to the Yellow Rose of Texas, we became our own country.
And what is the Yellow Rose guilty of, or what was her claim to fame?
She was a wonderful, a beautiful distraction for Santa Ana. She was a distraction. I have a whole book on her, by the way.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
We were part of Mexico at one point. We were also part of France, I remember. Six Flags over Texas. The theme park got its name because of the six flags that have once flown over Texas. It's true.
And this concludes Damien's episode right now, because we're just going to turn this into a Sarah Talks History on the rest of the show.
Oh, Lord. Texas still believes it's its own country. Texas still believes if they want to leave the U.S., they could. They will secede. They did try to secede. Was it 5 years ago or something like that? I was in Michigan. I'd never live in Cali again. It's beautiful. California is beautiful. See, I said something positive about it.
So wait, all those people who claim Texas is their own country or want it, are they kyuk-kyuks?
No, they're Texans.
Okay. Okay, no. You can end the show now because I'm just gonna
No. They're not necessarily kyuk-kyuks. Okay, Texas has its own culture. And I'm telling like every state really does have its own culture. I mean, Florida. Okay, that's all I gotta say.
Florida, man.
Florida. Texas has its own culture, as and they're very, very prideful of their Texas pride. Texas, you don't. We will talk crap. Like, I'm from Dallas. I will talk crap about Houston all day long. I will talk crap about El Paso. I'm gonna talk crap about Galveston. But anyone says anything bad about it that's not a Texan, it's like, hey, that's my state. Back off. And it's indoctrinated in us from school. No other state has a state history. We have a full year just on Texas history. We are trained from a very small age to prepare to secede from the U.S. So it's just part of the culture. So that concludes Texas history with Sarah for today.
Does this conclude Texas history? Texas history? Okay, because
I adore you. Oh my gosh, that was fun.
That was not fun for me to have to experience that. That was not fun for me. So that is the equivalent of me saying, because I'm a New Yorker, that is my nationality. My nationality is NYC till I die.
I love New York.
Terror Squad, sure. Flip Mode, all that other stuff.
Sure.
California sure. had a California history. Okay, Ian, when I talk to you this week, I need you to give me backstory on that too, because I don't. We'll do a separate one. Gold Rush, the 49ers. Yes, not the football team for those who are listening.
Yeah, the actual. Yeah.
This reminds me of like Oregon Trail, but I can talk about this another day.
That's where my family was my dad's side is the side from California. They were there for the Gold Rush. And
you mean settlers?
Hmm?
They were Californian settlers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, say that, because when you say, oh, they were from California, you make it seem like it was their cultural background because they were born from the earth of California.
Say they were some of the first settlers in California. I'm going to say settlers.
We'll go with that.
In California.
Cool. Great.
I'm going to say the first people because no. My family was, my mom's side was some of the first settlers in Texas. So. We don't change locations, so yeah. Settlers. Hey, Damien. Oh, I can't make fun of you. It's 7:20 for wine. Anyways,
I was gonna say, are you done? Are you done
I'm
with
done.
The history
I'm
portion
done.
Of our show?
I'm
today?
Sorry. History, I will geek out way too much.
This will be edited out for the podcast. I will put this as a separate entity and have Sarah host a Sarah Talks History podcast on the
Patreon.
Damien G Network. Yeah, Patreon. Nobody wants to pay for that. Nobody wants to pay for that.
Listen, maybe some people do.
Nobody wants to pay a dollar to hear you talk about history. And if so they do, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Well, you know what? Let us know.
Let us know in the comments. Yes, let us know in the comments. Reach the show at DamonGShow@gmail.com. Hit us up at DamonGShow on all your social media platforms. Before we go, you have something to plug, Sarah.
I do.
And not Kegel balls.
You know, there is a company out there. No, I have figured out Instagram a little bit more. I will now plug my Instagram because actually I am, as of this week, possibly tonight or tomorrow, will be having my own personal podcast section. So I have updated my Instagram, which is @coach_girlfriday. It is right here.
Are you holding them like boobs? What is that? What was that?
No, I'm not. I'm trying to
see. Chris knew. Chris knew exactly what you were doing. He was like, "Oh no!" He knew exactly what you were doing. Exactly. Knew.
This has got off the rails. So
coach_girlfriday. That is on your
my Instagram. Yes. So follow me there. Follow me there.
Yeah, we're gonna point that way. Not. Yeah, there we go. Much, much better.
Right
much
here.
Better. And for those who don't know, the Girl Friday thing is from Dragnet or Tony Stark's Friday. As she calls me Tony, I call her Friday because she's always literally reminding me about something or following up with something that
Did you go check your mail?
I did check my mail because you texted me at 2 a.m. to check my mail while I was sleeping. So thank you for that. But as always, check in with all of us. You know, find me, Damon G Show, Sarah at coach_girlfriday on Instagram. And she will be launching her own podcast talking about her own growth stories with clients and like-minded women and men who are comfortable sharing their growth stories. So be on the lookout.